On February 21st, 2012, the Russian feminist punk rock group Pussy Riot played a protest song inside Christ the Savior Cathedral in Moscow. It's the tallest Orthodox Christian church in the world, and it's located just a few blocks away from the Kremlin. The performance lasted 40 seconds, but it resulted in the arrest and sentencing of three of the band's members and forced the others to go underground. Protests all over the world, both in support of and against Pussy Riot, lasted long after the group's initial imprisonment and all throughout the trial itself. Joining us now are Mike Lerner and Maxim Pozdorovkin, the directors and producers of a film called Pussy Riot, A Punk Prayer, which received the World Cinema Documentary Special Jury Award for Punk Spirit at Sundance this year. It debuts this Monday on HBO, and then will also be part of the Human Rights Watch Festival later this month. I'm very pleased to welcome Mike Lerner and Maxim Pozdorovkin to our show today. Hello.
Hello.
Thank you very much for having us.
Wasn't Pussy Riot formed in response to Vladimir Putin's return to power?
That's the case. Yeah, I mean, pretty much on the day that he was returned to his third term, a group of artists got together and formed Pussy Riot in order to really protest against what they see, what they saw as the injustice of that fact.
So they're solely an anti-Putin organization, or do they have other causes that they also fight for or against?
No, they're in fact, we should start out by saying that, you know, one of the misconceptions is that Pussy Riot are a band. What they are is they're a group of performance artists who take on the guise of a band, of a punk rock band.
Well, and musically, they are not the most interesting group that ever existed in music.
Right, because they have no interest in releasing records or touring or doing anything else. So they take on the guise of being a band, and then they stage these unsanctioned guerrilla performances in symbolic locations. And their choice of locations reveals a lot about their politics and what they stand for. So they're much more than being anti-Putin. They're against the system as such. They're against the relationship, the close relationship between church and state. They're pro-LGBT rights. They're against the vertical of power. And foremost, they're against a certain kind of patriarchal structure that exists in society. I mean, they're, you know, hardcore feminists.
Well, Maxim, is their name as provocative in Russian as it is in English?
It's actually even worse. In fact, translating their name is in English, so they came up with a band name, Pussy Riot. And in many ways, we say that they've reappropriated the word pussy like no one has ever done. But if you were to translate their name in Russia, it would actually be probably...
Say it on the air. The FCC might speak Russian.
Significantly more vulgar than it is in English.
How many members are there, Mike?
Well, that varies. I mean, they're an anonymous collective of people, and the numbers of the group vary between sort of 8 and 20, depending on the time. And at the moment, you know, they're sort of rested from their activities. Of course, two of them are currently in prison, and since this trial, you know, the activities of the group have gone quiet for the moment.
Were all of them on stage in the church that night?
No.
Well, there was five took part in the cathedral action.
And it should be said that the different members are involved in different ways, so they're involved in different degrees. So some are more involved with the music, some are more involved with the performance, some are more involved with the conceptual work of the group, etc.
Were they, the ones who were arrested, considered the leaders?
No, they're, one of the things is that the central idea of Pussy Riot is anonymity, so they're an anti-hierarchical organization without a leader, without a head. So when one's gone, they can easily be replaced.
And what was the point of doing this performance in the most important Russian Orthodox church in Moscow?
Well, it was very specifically to draw attention to the close and corrupt relationship between Putin and the Orthodox Church, headed up by the Patriarch Kirill, who's the Russian Pope. And it was a protest against that cozy relationship. Kirill welcomed Putin's return to power as a miracle of God. And obviously urges all the faithful to vote for him. So Putin derives a lot of political power from this group. And it was also a religious a point that only a man is allowed to stand on the altar and take these services. And they were saying, well, you know, women should be able to lead these services too. So,
well, has Putin embraced the church partly because during the Soviet era, the church was pretty much banned? In fact, this cathedral was razed, wasn't it? It's been rebuilt since the fall of communism?
No, that's correct. And the government has invested a lot in rebuilding churches, which isn't a bad thing in itself. The point that the women in the group make is when they're asked what they dislike most about Putin, is what they say is that it's the kind of nationalism that he promotes. And it's that nationalism that's become intertwined with Orthodoxy to create this exclusive Russian identity, which fosters a lot of a xenophobia that's very rampant in Russia right now and things of that nature.
We see that with a group that is very opposed to Pussy Riot, called Carriers of the Cross. Many of the members of it look intimidating, with shaggy beards, leather jackets, black T-shirts with skulls and knives on them.
They can be called the Dick Squad.
And they seem to be the Russian equivalent of neo-Nazis. Are they, or is their religious component more important?
Well, as Max has said, the Orthodox Church has been increasingly associated with this extreme nationalist fervor, which is definitely something that Putin has been stirring up. I mean, I don't think they represent the mainstream of the church, and indeed they're quite eccentric in themselves, but. I Max could probably answer this better. They are a growing and burgeoning aspect of the religion.
In fact, they're closer to something like Civil War reenactors, because they, in a strange way, the story of Pussy Riot radicalized them to become performance artists of themselves. So they burn Harry Potter books and Madonna posters and things of that nature. And so,
well, what was the what were the lyrics of the thing that Pussy Riot performed at the cathedral, the punk prayer, as they called it?
So, there were two main choruses to this, and one was Mother of God, Chase Putin Away, and the second one was Mother of God, Become a Feminist. So those were the two main points. The verses themselves spoke to gay rights and how the church has been used to advocate against gay rights, and also about the support. One kind of controversial line was that when they say that that the patriarch believes in Putin and that the bitch should try believing in God instead. So it was those kinds of lyrics.
How did you gain access to this footage? Was somebody filming it at the time? Were they filming it?
Well, what Pussy Riot are really media artists, and in fact their performances are not intended to be live performances. They're actually intended to be filmed performances that are then put online. So indeed, yes, all of their major actions are filmed and edited and cut together and posted online. So that's exactly how they exist as an art form.
And there have been previous groups that some of them have been involved with, like Vonya. Were they pretty much doing the same sort of thing that Pussy Riot did, although in the film you actually show footage of them performing sex acts in public? So that's something that could get them arrested right here in the United States.
No, that's exactly right. And, in the film, we try to get people to reflect about the limits of freedom in their own countries. And Vajna was a kind of a performance group that existed, that some of the members of Pussy Riot belonged in. Whereas Vajna is very intellectual and kind of is very conceptually complicated and is very difficult to explain to, especially to Western audiences, Pussy Riot, their whole idea was, and their reason for using punk as a guise, is to kind of have a clear, direct, abrasive message that can be delivered to people.
My guests are Maxim Pozdorovkin and Mike Lerner. Their film, Pussy Riot, A Punk Prayer, will be shown on HBO. And then, as part of the Human Rights Watch Festival, that's which one is first? HBO is this
HBO coming? Is on this Monday,
June 10th,
and then on the 17th, the Film Society, the 17th and 18th.
Mm-hmm, that's correct. Yeah, yeah.
Will be the Film Society of Lincoln Center at the Eleanor Bunin Monroe Film Center. So let's talk about the after they were arrested. Under the laws of Russia, did what they do, was that an actual crime?
Well, what they were charged with was Article 213.2, which is basically a hate crime. And I think a lot of people felt at the time that the prosecution was really fudging things to get this charge to stick. So it was hooliganism motivated by religious hatred. And a lot of, and whereas now, because of that, there are some procedural kind of appeals that can take place. Since then, the church has used what happened and used the story to its advantage. And so just about 2 weeks ago, there was a new law, a new anti-blasphemy law passed, which is, has been called the Pussy Riot Law, which makes it so that what they did would offend the feelings of believers is now actually a criminal act.
Did Pussy Riot expect to get the kind of attention they got? I assume they didn't expect to be arrested.
Well, exactly. They didn't expect to be arrested. And I think they were surprised by how this blew up into such a huge international story. I mean, it now kind of seems obvious that something that looks and sounds like that and is the victims of such an obvious injustice would attract liberal world attention. But I think even they are still surprised at how enormous this story has grown.
And how, with only a few of the members were arrested, what happened to the others?
They're still active. They're working to get their bandmates out of prison and to spread the message of Pussy Riot and to spread their ideas. They haven't performed. They haven't performed since then because it's become difficult for legal reasons, as well as, you know, they're just thinking how to move forward. Partially because the response had been so big to the punk prayer.
The prosecution lawyers said, say in an interview in your film, that protesters like Pussy Riot see Putin as being behind everything, going so far as to call it an obsession like a medical condition. Well, do you think that we do see Putin's hand in all of this?
There's no doubt that he could have stopped this trial any stage, but at the same time, you know, he didn't instigate this. You know, it very much was driven by the church, by the Orthodox Church, who saw these women as blaspheming threat to the future of Russia, and Putin sort of went along with it. And in fact, he made a comment that he was surprised that they hadn't been apprehended and arrested prior to this, because a lot of their protests were certainly very obviously anti-Putin. But, you know, so it's a mixture of him driving it and it driving itself in some way.
Do you think that the support that American celebrities showed Pussy Riot has had an impact on the trial and public opinion in Russia?
I don't think it's had that much of an impact. And I think it does do a disservice to both women and the story to think of it just in terms of Putin, because speaking yesterday with Katya, who is one of the members of Pussy Riot, who was released on appeal, you know, she says that if it wasn't Putin, it would be seen that if it would be just as bad. They're against the system, a patriarchal system of government that exists, and Putin is the symbol of it. But so they really want to transform that system. It's not just about one person for them.
So what happened? They were all put on trial, and what kinds of sentences were they given?
Well, the three of them were initially given 2-year sentences in a penal colony. Katya,
what does that mean, Siberia?
Not as such, but they're kind of work camps, essentially. And then Katya was, in fact, released on appeal back in October.
But that's because she apologized.
Well, not so much that. She changed her lawyer, and her new lawyer put forward a different defense that, in fact, she hadn't had the opportunity of getting onto the altar and participating in this action to the same degree and in the same way that the other two, other four women did. And I think the state saw a good opportunity of, A, showing the world how fair and just and rational they were by listening to this argument, and also, you know, by driving a kind of wedge between the group by letting one go and keeping
it. And did the others see that as a betrayal? After all, she's saying, well, I didn't do it as bad as they did.
I think that there has been a lot of speculations, but no, I think that they're like a partisan guerrilla band. They don't see any benefit in having extra people in jail. And I think that, you know, they also realized that their lawyers weren't doing them any favors. So they hired, since then, they've hired Katya's lawyer who has been handling all of their appeals. So I think that there's solidarity in the group.
There was one of them also became pregnant, was pregnant, wasn't she?
Well, no. The two women who are currently serving their 2-year sentences both have children. Masha has a 5-year-old son and Nadia has a 5-year-old daughter. I think that what you're referring to is that during one of their previous performances of the orgy staged in a biology museum, which we show, Nadia is 9 months pregnant and also gave birth 4 days later after that performance.
Do you see any similarities between what's happened with Pussy Riot in Russia and what's happened in China to Ai Weiwei?
Well, I think we're very keen for this film not to be seen as picking on Russia and the very issues that Pussy Riot represent, i.e. the limitations on freedom of expression and freedom to protest, are definitely issues in China, as you say, but there are also issues in Britain and in America and in every other country in the world that has introduced increasingly draconian measures to control freedom of speech. And so, you know, in many ways, Pussy Riot are emblematic of this struggle. And I certainly, Max and I definitely want people to reflect on that while watching this film.
Well, we don't see performance artists being thrown in jail in most countries.
But I would say that there's also similarities with the Occupy movement in this country, because if you look at what happened with Pussy Riot, the government tolerated them for a long time and then ultimately sided with a secular kind of with a conservative element of society that wanted them punished. And here with the Occupy movement, again, the government tolerated the movement for a while and at the end of the day organized a crackdown that benefited conservative interests.
Some celebrities, as I said earlier, from the West have come out in support of Pussy Riot, Paul McCartney, and we're going to go out with the song that ends your film, as performed by Madonna. The film will air on HBO June. Oh, it's not performed?
It's not by Madonna. It's a song by Peaches and Simone Jones.
Oh, okay. The film airs on HBO June 10th at 9 p.m. will be screened in New York during the Human Rights Watch Festival on June 17th at 9 p.m. at the Film Society of Lincoln Center's Eleanor Bunin Monroe Film Center, and then June 18th at 7 p.m. at the IFC Center. Ticket information on our show page at WNYC.org. My great thanks to Mike Lerner and Maxime Pozdorovkin for being on our show today.
Thank you very much.